Ever wonder why a simple border crossing can mark the difference between prosperity and poverty? The answer isn't geography, culture, or leadership ignorance. It's institutions. The true determinants of a nation's fate are the rules, both formal and informal, that shape economic and political life. Countries flourish when they develop inclusive institutions that distribute power broadly and create economic opportunities for everyone. They falter when extractive institutions concentrate power among elites who exploit others for personal gain. This institutional perspective explains puzzling contrasts like North and South Korea, identical in culture and geography, but dramatically different in prosperity, or the stark divide between Nogales, Arizona and Nogales, Mexico. The pattern repeats across history and continents. Inclusive institutions create virtuous cycles of innovation and growth, while extractive ones trap nations in poverty despite their natural resources or strategic locations. What's fascinating is how these institutional patterns become self-reinforcing. Once established, inclusive institutions create their own constituencies who defend and strengthen them. Similarly, extractive institutions generate vicious circles where elites use their economic power to consolidate political control, which they then leverage to extract more wealth. The seeds of today's global inequality were often planted centuries ago during colonization. When Spanish conquistadors encountered dense indigenous populations in Mexico and Peru, they simply replaced native elites atop existing extractive systems. The encomienda and mita systems forced indigenous people to work in horrific conditions, concentrating wealth among Spanish settlers while creating extreme inequality that persists today. North America followed a different path, not because British colonizers were more benevolent, but because different conditions demanded different strategies. Without dense indigenous populations to exploit, the Virginia Company had to attract voluntary settlers by offering land and establishing representative assemblies. These early differences in colonial approaches planted seeds for dramatically different institutional development. Think about it like this. Imagine two gardens planted with different seeds and tending practices. 500 years later, they've grown into entirely different ecosystems. That's what happened with colonial institutions. In British North America, relatively broad property ownership and political participation evolved into increasingly inclusive institutions. In Spanish America, extractive colonial systems persisted after independence, as new elites simply replaced Spanish authorities while maintaining systems that benefited themselves. Once established, inclusive institutions tend to strengthen themselves through several interconnected mechanisms. Pluralistic political systems naturally resist power grabs because multiple centers of authority, legislatures, courts, state governments, civic organizations, check each other. Free media investigates corruption, independent courts enforce constitutional rights, and competitive markets prevent excessive economic concentration. Consider England after 1688's Glorious Revolution. New constraints on royal power enabled crucial economic reforms. Stronger property rights encouraged investment. Limitations on royal monopolies fostered competition. And new financial institutions provided capital for business growth. The resulting economic dynamism created powerful new interest groups, merchants, industrialists, professionals, who demanded greater political representation, creating pressure for further reforms. This virtuous circle isn't automatic. It requires vigilance against powerful interests who constantly attempt to subvert inclusive institutions through lobbying and regulatory capture. But it creates broad-based constituencies who benefit from and therefore defend fair systems, middle-class professionals, small business owners, organized labor, and civil society groups who understand their success depends on maintaining inclusive arrangements. Extractive institutions create vicious cycles that perpetuate poverty. When elites control political institutions, they shape economic systems to enrich themselves, which in turn strengthens their political dominance. Sierra Leone illustrates this pattern. British colonials ruled through paramount chiefs, and post-independence, President Siaka Stevens consolidated power by dismantling opposition, even destroying railway tracks to isolate resistant regions. This led to devastating poverty and civil war. Even revolutions often maintain extractive patterns. In Ethiopia, when Mengistu overthrew Haile Selassie, he promised change but simply occupied the palace and intensified extractive policies. These harmful institutions persist because they serve those in power. Ghana's Kwame Nkrumah and North Korea's leadership implemented economically damaging policies not from ignorance but to maintain political control. Why can't extractive institutions generate sustained economic growth despite examples like the Soviet Union and China achieving impressive growth rates? The key distinction lies in two types of growth: growth from resource extraction and technology adoption versus growth through innovation and creative destruction. Extractive institutions can achieve the first type, as seen in the Soviet Union's rapid industrialization through labor reallocation and imported technology, similar to China's recent growth model. However, sustained growth requires continuous innovation, developing new technologies and processes that replace old ones. This creative destruction inherently threatens established interests by making existing skills obsolete and displacing incumbent businesses. Extractive institutions naturally resist this process to protect the status quo. A classic example is Queen Elizabeth I denying William Lee's patent for the stocking frame knitting machine, fearing social upheaval. Similar resistance in the Habsburg, Russian, and Ottoman empires contributed to their economic decline. If institutions are so persistent, how do they ever change? The answer lies in critical junctures, historical moments when existing power structures are disrupted, creating opportunities for transformation. The Black Death provides a dramatic example. By killing 30-50% of Europe's population, the plague created severe labor shortages. In Western Europe, where feudal institutions were already weakening, peasants gained bargaining power, eventually leading to serfdom's breakdown. In Eastern Europe, however, landlords responded by imposing even harsher second serfdom. The same shock led to divergent outcomes because of small initial differences in political structures. The discovery of the Americas created another critical juncture. The influx of silver, gold, and colonial opportunities disrupted European power structures. In England, Atlantic trade strengthened merchant classes, who eventually challenged royal authority. In Spain, colonial wealth strengthened the monarchy, allowing it to suppress challenges. These moments don't determine outcomes, they create possibilities. Small differences at critical junctures can have enormous consequences. If the Spanish Armada had defeated England in 1588, would the Glorious Revolution ever have occurred? If Mao had lived longer, would Deng Xiaoping have implemented China's market reforms? Some nations have successfully transformed their extractive institutions into inclusive ones. Botswana evolved from having minimal infrastructure at its 1966 independence to becoming an upper-middle-income country. This success, built on Tswana traditions of constrained leadership through public assemblies and President Seretse Khama's decision to nationalize diamond revenues for all citizens while establishing transparent institutions. The American South also transformed, breaking free from post-Civil War extractive institutions and Jim Crow laws through the civil rights movement, federal intervention, and economic diversification beyond plantation agriculture. By the 1980s, the region's economy had substantially caught up with the rest of the nation. These transformations typically succeed when they build on existing inclusive elements, coincide with disruptions to old power structures, involve broad coalitions, and combine committed leadership with grassroots pressure.